I may have implied or said that Bert Arman was one of the ones that didn't believe Jesus was a real person, and that's not true. He did, but he was the one. He, in his debate, is where he's talking about that. What if the Christians made it up about him being the Son of God? So that's where he was coming from. And thanks for pointing that out and clarifying that. Okay, so we'll do more questions and answers after the next session. And let's get started with it. All right, so we saw from our last session those first two points, that Jesus was a real person and he was executed by crucifixion, and that it can be confirmed. These two points can be confirmed by reliable evidence. What do you think the next point would be? What would be the third point? Oh, let me put that second point up. Yeah, there it is. Those are the first two points we, as an introduction last session. What do you think the third point would be? I'm sorry? There's something in between.
He died.
And not only did he die, well, we know that, he was buried in a tomb that they knew. Now, why are you going to say, well, of course. Well, we need to confirm that. Did the Jews in Jerusalem know the tomb that he was buried in? Well, to help support this point, I want to read from historian John Robertson. The burial of Christ is one of the earliest and best attested facts about Jesus. John A.T. Robinson. And this is the general consensus. There's a lot of people that will make that same quote, that he was buried in a tomb that they knew. However, in spite of that, there are some who will not accept that. They do not accept that he was buried in a tomb that's well known, which leads them to this next point that they disagree with. The tomb was found empty, point four. They're saying no. Wasn't found. How could they find him in an empty tomb when they didn't even know what the tomb he was in? Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, how do you know that they didn't? How do you know that they didn't know the tomb that he was in? They tried to approach it this way. Since they thought the tomb was empty, then that proves they didn't know where it was. Well, that's starting with an end result premise already. And it's almost like a circular argument. But that's an assumption. Because the majority of historians and scholars accept, that the Jewish community knew the tomb he was buried in. For example, here's another historian, Jacob Kremer. By far, most exegeses hold firmly to the reliability of the biblical statements concerning the empty tomb. Now, his statement supports both of our points, that if you know the tomb is empty, then that means you know that it was where the tomb was. But then you can say, well, that's a circular argument too. But here's what's very interesting about these two points, number three and four. The ones who reject three and four accept point five. Soon, on multiple occasions and under various circumstances, different individuals and groups of people witnessed Jesus alive from the dead. How could that be? There's a few critics that they accept point five, but they don't accept point three and four. No. Who in the world would do that? I mean, who would come? Now, is there really a person that would think that? Yeah, there is. Meet Mr. Gerd Ludemann, prominent critic, very one of the most outspoken critics of the resurrection or the historicity of the resurrection. And he says that he knows Jesus was a real person. He accepts that. He knows that he was executed. The evidence is clear about that as well. He knows people saw Jesus, that people saw Jesus alive after his death, after his crucifixion. He knows he saw that there's evidences about that, but I'm not going to accept points 3 and 4. I find that very interesting. How do I know that this is what the guy thinks? Because that's what he says in a book. It may be taken as historically certain that Peter and the disciples had experiences after Jesus' death in which Jesus appeared to them as the risen Christ. So you see what he's saying? He accepts points 1, accepts points 2, even accepts point 5, but he does not accept points 3. How could this be? Well, he rejects point 3 and 4 only on what I was calling assumptions, the circular argument. That if they thought the tomb was empty, then that means and proves that they really didn't know where it was. And if they didn't know where it was, then they really couldn't find the body. That's assumption without evidence. But he doesn't discard point five. Does he believe in Jesus as the Son of God, risen Christ? No, he does not. Then how does he accept 5? Well, there's a lot of evidence about it. The witnesses. He's suggesting that they did see him, but they were only visions. They thought they saw him. They didn't really see him. He believes that they only had visions, and that was visions that caused the disciples to only think they saw the risen Christ, but in fact, he didn't really raise from the dead. Well, there's a few things wrong with that theory. If there were only visions, and that meant if they were only visions that they saw, then what does that mean in reality? It means Jesus is dead. He's buried somewhere. And if that's the case, then you really can't maintain a movement of this magnitude if he is buried somewhere, and if there's a body somewhere, in a tomb somewhere. Now you may go around for a little while and say, yeah, I saw Jesus. Yeah, he was raised. But you're not going to get very far with that story because someone's going to throw your nose into a tomb where his body is. If he wasn't raised, he had to be still dead. And if he was dead, there's a body somewhere that they could have found. Well, we know there was never a body found. So you couldn't really spread this around that you saw him if in fact he was dead. But according to Ludman, the way to explain that this amazingly rapidly growing new movement, Christianity, was that the disciples only thought they saw Jesus alive. Only visions. That's why he goes on to say, that's why they didn't really know where he was buried. There was no way that they had the right tomb. They got mixed up, and that's just the way it is. And we know that he was never raised from the dead. It was all visions. Well, wouldn't you think that John and Mary, the two that were at the crucifixion, and Joseph, the one that owned the tomb, do you think they would have known where it was? It's just me. I don't know. I'm not a scholar. But I would assume, and there I can make assumptions, but I'm asking, is that a legitimate question? Wouldn't you think they knew where is that? But there's problems. Problems with his theory. He claims that Peter saw visions in a way that is similar to the way people would see someone that they just lost to death, someone that they loved in their family. And so in this emotional state, you would have this propensity to see that person come back. And so is that possible? Yeah, that's possible. You can, be in a state of mind of an emotional state, that something like that could happen. And so he says, well, Peter was in that state of mind. He was so sorry for denying the Lord and cursing him that he's there. I see him. All right. That could happen. It's possible on an individual basis. But think of the condition Peter was in. Well, before I address that, though, what about the Apostle Paul? Do you think he was in that emotional state of mind? No. Paul was an enemy. He did not miss Jesus. He did not hallucinate on that road of Damascus because he felt bad that Jesus was dead. And Saul was an enemy of Christ. Mr. Ludeman, what do you have to say about that? Well, he doesn't back down off of that. He suggests that what if, you're going to hear a lot of what ifs from the arguments, but what if Saul was a secret Christian? What if he really did like the ideas of what Christ was expounding? You know, deep down it was very attractive to him, but he couldn't give up Judaism. I mean, Moses, he couldn't give up Moses. He was a Jew. He loved the law of Moses. It was a conflict with him. He could not really go over to that side, but then all of a sudden, someday he did. He just came out and said, I really like this movement, and that's why he did it. He, no longer could he resist. I mean, come on. Like I said, I'm just an average guy. I'm not one of these scholars and historians. Maybe they think differently than me, and that's what you come up with. This is, in my opinion, these what-if statements are ludicrous. And it tells you then something about point five. As ludicrous as that may be, what does it tell you about point five? There's some good evidence about point five. Evidence that a lot of people saw the man Jesus. And that's why they need ways to explain it away, because they can't deny the evidence. They don't deny that there were individuals, even groups of individuals, claiming to see Jesus. In fact, Ludeman, some of his statements are ludicrous in my opinion, but Ludeman, I did it again, this is a quote. I said this, I think we read this. It may be taken as historically certain that Peter and the disciples had experiences after Jesus' death in which Jesus appeared to them as the risen Christ. If an enemy of Christ comes to that conclusion, then the evidence that he's looking at has to be pretty good and strong, that people saw him. Problem is, he said, but it was visions. I'm not looking at the solution yet. I'm just looking at how they're trying to excuse it away. I'm looking at the fact that there's evidence that convinces even people like him. One of the problems, though, with his theory is that visions and hallucinations don't happen on an everyday basis to a lot of people all at the same time, the same vision. It's scientifically impossible. It cannot happen. Let me pause for a minute. I was thinking whether I was going to go this route. Let me pause for a minute. I got in the habit of saying that word. Ludeman claims, he accepts the fact that there was hundreds of people that saw him. But he's saying it was visions. Did anybody in the first century ever accuse any of those witnesses who saw Christ that it was a vision? No. Okay, I can't find any. They can't find any. They don't see any. Because, you know, if there was anyone that claimed it in the first century as it was happening, that it was recorded, this man would be the first one to start waving that flag. But there is none, okay? No one claimed it. We only have this accusation today, in our time frame, recent time, not back then when it was happening. Do you realize, though, that we do have a record of someone having a vision from the first century? Yes, we do. It's a hallucination, a vision, okay? In other words, I'm saying, I'll give you more hints for those of you who are wondering who. Someone's saying, it's impossible for you to see that person. You only think you saw that person. Yes. Oh, get my slides caught up here. I don't know why I have problems sometimes with getting my slides caught up. I'm ahead of myself. You remember when the angel miraculously freed Peter? Right. He came to the house where the brethren were praying. Who were they praying for? Peter. All right. Why were they praying for him? To get out of prison. What happened just a few weeks prior to this? Other people were preaching Jesus, like Philip. All right. Stephen. What did they do to them? Killed them. Don't you think they'd be praying for Peter? Yeah. Why? It's not looking good. Three strikes. We get another one here. They're going to stone Peter. Pray for him. Okay. And when Peter, knocked at the door of the gateway, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer, recognizing Peter's voice. In her joy, she did not open the gate, but she ran in and reported that Peter was standing at the gate. She was excited. Peter's here. She only recognized his voice. And what did she do? She ran back to tell the others. It's Peter. Peter's at the door. And they said, great, bring him in. No, they didn't say that. No. What did they say? Get out. You're out of your mind. But she kept insisting it was Peter. Insisting that it was so. And they kept saying, it's his angel. You're having a vision. Rhoda, it's not him. They were sure if it wasn't him. Wait a minute. You're sure it wasn't him? What were you praying for him? What were you praying for? And yet you're so sure it wasn't him. I suspect they thought he was already dead. It's a good possibility. I'm not saying for sure they did. It's a good possibility they thought he was dead. I mean, after all, Philip and Stephen, right? They were killed. But they were sure one thing, that wasn't Peter. You're out of your mind. You're crazy. The main point I'm trying to express here is that there were people who understood visions are possible in the first century. And they thought Rhoda was having a vision. But nobody ever thought those 500 and more, there might have been thousands of people that saw him, witnesses. How many people saw him at one time? 500, right? Over 500, Paul says, right? That's just one time. Not to mention the other 39 days. How many people saw the man? Hundreds. Could be 1,000. And no one ever accused them, any one of them, of seeing visions. There's no record of mass hallucinations about them, nor is there any record of mass hallucinations about anybody, because it's impossible. And that's the best the critics can come up with. Hallucination theories, the best they have. Mass hallucinations. And they have to fill or come up with loopholes and excuses because the evidence is so good and solid that a lot of people saw him. Hundreds of witnesses saw Jesus. Oh, so there's another theory. Now this one's way out. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, this fellow's not taking. This is so serious. So it's ridiculous. I only bring it to show you how far some people will go. Excuse me? Jesus might have a twin brother, you're telling me? Yeah, he had a twin brother. He was hidden for the first 30 years of his life. And then, after he was dead, they brought him out. Come on. What ifs? Give me a break. Now, I don't mean any disrespect, but who in their right mind would think something like that? You've got to be desperate. I'm assuming there's nobody in this audience that thinks that. I don't mean to insult you, but you've got to be desperate. Here's an interesting quote. You ever hear of Pincus Lapide, another historian, Jewish Old Testament scholar? "I accept the resurrection not as an invention of the community of disciples, but as a historical event. If the resurrection of Jesus from the dead on that Easter Sunday were a public event which had been made known not only to the 530 Jewish witnesses, but to the entire population, all Jews would have become followers of Jesus." That's pretty strong. If the entire population of the Jews that day saw Jesus, there'd be no room for Judaism any longer. He goes on to say, "If the defeated and depressed group of disciples overnight could change into a victorious movement of faith based only on autosuggestion or self-deception without a fundamental faith experience, then this would be a much greater miracle than the resurrection itself." You can't have this kind of an event and not ask why. How? Well, these guys, he's a scholar. Even the one that doesn't believe in the resurrected Christ knows there was this kind of event that happened by people, hundreds of people who saw Jesus Christ. And it's evidence that we all have access to. They have it. We have it. So we come up with these 5 points. Jesus is a real person. Jesus was crucified. He was buried in a tomb known by the Jews. The tomb was found empty, and many people saw him alive. And the only way they can explain away number 5 is if mass hallucinations occurred. But that's impossible. The body was never discovered. And you might be able to explain the tomb if the body was, or the empty tomb if the body was stolen. You know, we might be able to explain the empty tomb. The body was stolen, but you can't start or maintain a movement of this force, of this size, with just, even if it was stolen, it was just missing. That it takes more than that, and we're going to look at a lot of that evidence coming up. So 3 and 4 are only rejected because they challenge that the evidence on that, because it's not as strong evidence as you have the strong evidence of people seeing him. And so they have to come up with what ifs on the other two. They're not ready to accept, though, what that Jewish scholar, Pincus, accepted, that they did see him. Because they need a loophole. They need to get... You see, I know for me it was... If someone's going to reject Jesus Christ, there's more going on than meets the eye. Follow the money. Where is my motivation? What do I want? And based on my wants, my desires, that's going to help steer me on what my worldview is going to be. See, I always come first. I always come first. And so I take that attitude. I used to have that attitude, and so I recognize that attitude in people too, that we all have that. And so I try to be gentle with others who have a different point of view. So I want to get out of the emotion and let's look at the evidence, let's look at the facts. And these people that are studying these things, these historians, some of them are believers, but most of them are not. They don't really believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God. But they do respect the scriptures. They respect that it has historical documents that were written. Real people wrote these things, and they look at them from that point of view. And if you do that, that you recognize that these are authentic documents, whether you believe what they say or not, it's not the point I'm making right now, but if you believe that and you recognize that, then... Okay, we can probably look at, we can look at Matthew. And we can look at Matthew and say, look, Matthew made some statements that he made, and if we look at it critically using, what's the word? I'm not very good at these words. Literary analysis. If we do that, then we can point to more evidence of the empty tomb in the case of Matthew writing about the empty tomb. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, do you remember what Matthew recorded about the empty tomb? What was the story going around? The soldiers, they were, yeah, that's right, they were, the body was, the soldiers were guarding. They were paid to guard the tomb, and they ran and tell the Jewish leaders what happened. We don't know what happened, but it's empty. The stone's got laid back, and he's not to be found. And what did they want to do? Bribe, well, they did. They bribed the soldiers to lie, to say the body was stolen by his friends, right? If I could find evidence outside of the scriptures that collaborates that, what Matthew wrote, I then have some evidence that is more solid. I can present this to the jury with evidence of what Matthew wrote, and by the way, here's someone collaborating it. Okay, well, let's find out. Is there some? Yeah, well, Justin Martyr, you may have heard of him. He was a Christian. He was a Christian leader from the second century. And in one of his books, he writes about a conversation he was having with a Jewish rabbi named Trypho. And in the conversation, it came up about Christ, Jesus Christ, about the resurrection. You know what Trypho responds to Justin with? You know how he says? Justin, everybody knows the body was stolen. You're looking at what year? Second century. What's the storyline by the Jewish community? The body was stolen. Here is somebody outside of Christianity that is admitting there's a story that it was stolen, the body. That tells you that that was going around. That tells you, hey, that's what Matthew wrote about, that the Jewish leaders bribed them. So here's two written by Matthew, but in this external collaboration that, yeah, we know it was stolen. That's how we explain the empty tomb, Justin. Oh, wait a minute. Trypho, you mean you know where the tomb is? He didn't question where the tomb was. Oh, you're not questioning it that they found it empty? No, we're not questioning that either. We know it was empty. They stole the body. You see the point I'm trying to make? Something simple, collaborating evidence about what Matthew wrote. And he's from the second century, and a lot of Jews believed the body was stolen, exactly as Matthew wrote it in the mid-first century. Let's look at Josephus. Not to do with the empty tomb, but other points about Jesus. He was a historian, as most of you know, from the first century. Another source for secular history and evidence about the man, Jesus. And he documented about Jesus being a teacher who was followed by large crowds or a lot of people following him. He claimed to be the Messiah. He was messianic in his message. In fact, that's why he was crucified. External evidence talking about the events of this man, Jesus. Critics tell us that this movement was invented. I used to think that it evolved over hundreds and hundreds of years. I used to think that for the purpose of controlling foolish people. I used to think that. In my younger days. But wait a minute. This man was alive in the first century. And he mentions this man, Jesus, by name, and he talks about other things about Jesus. And we're going to read a very interesting quote later on in another session, what Josephus says. So these things were not, these stories were not really made up over time because we have evidence. Well, the manuscripts, you know, you Christians keep talking to me about these manuscripts. Yeah. But there's nothing outside those manuscripts that talks about Jesus. That's what I've been told until I started looking. The story about Jesus Christ, it doesn't have all the same details that are written in the Gospels and in the New Testament letters. Obviously, it doesn't. but you'll get lots of pieces of information. All of a sudden, it's collaborating that, and it's collaborating that. I'm saying, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. It's not hundreds of years of made-up stories about Jesus. Here's another tidbit of information. Is that up there? Is that made up? You and I know where it came from. Our non-believing friends are trying to tell us that things like this were made up. Who wrote that? Pilate. In fact, he wrote it in three languages, didn't he? Jews didn't want him to put that up there, did he? Jews didn't like it. They didn't like that. There's not a scholar on the earth that doesn't realize and know as a fact that that was written by Pilate in the first century and hung over Jesus' head. Here's what's interesting about that statement. The Jews were not the only ones who didn't like that statement. Neither did Christians. They hated that statement. Why? He's not king of the Jews. I'll use Ed Winfield's famous line. What am I, chopped liver? He's king of us. Well, actually, he's king of everybody, not just the Jews. We don't like that. That was not made up by Christians. They didn't like it. When you make something up and invent something, you use it. They didn't. They were sorry it was even in the book. But they didn't take it out. It's in the book. He's our king, too. So it wasn't made up. It was not invented. So what we talked a lot about is the empty tomb and the weak arguments trying to explain the empty tomb. We also saw how historians accept the evidence of all the eyewitnesses and how the sightings of Jesus, the eyewitnesses, and we saw some what-ifs. We're going to see others coming up. Rather than providing hard evidence to show things are the way they are, we normally get into arguments, and if we're doing it, we better stop. I better not use, well, what if? That's not the way it works. Truth is not a what if. History is history. And if you can show me something, then I'll accept it if it's in fact real and accurate. We've talked about hallucinations. We talked about the visions. Did I mention Saul? Yeah, a little bit, Saul. Was he a friend? How come he didn't? Did he have a vision? We're going to talk more about Saul later, if time permits. There's a lot more we can talk about Saul. You know him as Paul, right? Okay. And let's see what else. And we also saw just recently the collaborating evidence of the theory or the lie that the body was stolen by a second century rabbi. And then we had the first century Josephus, who confirmed other things about Jesus. And then, obviously, we just talked about as Jesus hung on the cross, that sign that was posed. These are little tidbits, little small things that were building up to it. Now, part one and two just barely scratches the surface. And a lot of this stuff you probably already knew, but we're just reinforcing it, and we're trying to get the groundwork, the foundation for it. Because when you start even putting these little bits of pieces of information together, you start building a case. You're saying, look, there's too many things that are unanswerable. Unanswerable. The big one is Christianity didn't take hundreds of years. It did not. How could that be? Now, we're going to be taking the position, moving forward, of a non-believer. I don't know most of you here, so I don't know if anyone in the audience is a non-believer or a believer. But we're going to take the position from a non-believer's point of view, because that's the real world in which I live. I want to talk with people that don't believe in Christ and try to explain to them Christ. And so I need to get into their mindset, and I need to understand where they're coming. Hey, Paul did that too, right? And Paul, how did he say that? in Rome as a Roman, as among the Gentiles, a Gentile. So he gets into their culture and understands where they're coming from. And I try to do that. I'm not always successful. But we're going to go in to play the rules. So you might be hearing me say things that sound like I don't believe it. Bear with me. Humor me. And let's take it there. We got time for, yeah, let's take a few more questions. We've got about 10 or 15 minutes for questions and answers. Anything out of that session that you want to ask, update? Maybe you have some more information on some of those things that I left out. Was there a question? Yeah. I can't hear you with the echo, sorry. Yeah. No, Pilate put it up there.
Okay. And my next question is, how certain are we about the birth and death dates of Christ?
The birth
and death dates of Christ.
And death dates?
Right.
Not very. We can narrow it down to, he was either crucified in 30 AD or 33, depending on how you want to count the calendars, because there's some mix-up in the different calendars when it was changed. So if that's the case, then he was either born near zero or he was born 4 BC, which is almost like a contradiction, but it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. But it's like trying to say, well, oh, you know, we just found this coin from 400 BC. Well, how do you know it's 400 BC? Because it says right there, 400 BC on the coin. That would be prophetic. Good question, though. And, you know, that's another thing. When I'm giving this presentation, there's always more stuff being found. And there's always more stuff coming out, more documentation. And the Internet's right there. And so I always got to correct things that I maybe made a mistake on because, it says this. Well, the problem with that is I have to do more research when I see things that contradict each other. I'm not a scholar. I don't know. I only can take other people's word for it. So I have to now compare it and now go further. I've learned not to be so quick to find a statement in a post and quickly put it down because he says it came from that source. And when you go back, you realize it's just circular sourcing. You can't find the original document. And so I'll go through my slides and I'll say, I can't really provide that. So it's always a changing thing. But that's what truth is about, to find the truth so that we understand it, to be able to explain it to a non-believer who will not accept the book that you and I accept. And if Jesus was not raised from the dead, like I said in the first lesson, I can't believe the book. Paul said, I'm a liar. Paul said, I made it up. I'm misrepresenting God if Jesus wasn't raised from the dead. I'll take Paul at his word. And that's why it's so important for me, and for anyone claiming to be a follower of Jesus, to prove that Jesus was raised from the dead. Because I didn't get to this point yet, so I hope this doesn't scare you, but I don't believe Jesus was raised from the dead. I used to. 2 Peter 1:21 tells me something different. I'm ahead of schedule. We'll probably get to that one tomorrow. Any more questions? Oh, wait a minute. Let me follow that up. I used to believe it, but now I know it. I left that part out. I'm sorry. Yeah. You got that one from the first part one. Yeah. I used to believe he was raised from the dead, but now I know it. And I get that from Peter 1:21. Anyone else? Any thoughts? Thank you for your attention. And we'll... Yeah, okay.
These people having
There's no one that that made the accusation that the 500 witnesses or more were imagining it, hallucinating, visions. The actual event was they saw him. He was real. It wasn't a vision. They could touch him. Can't touch visions. And so Ludeman makes the claim that those hundreds of witnesses only thought they saw visions. They really didn't see him. They were visions. We have no one making that statement in the first century that they were only visions of Jesus Christ. No document. I'm sorry. Document. No documented evidence. If you find some, let me know. I have not found any. I'm not aware of him going that far. No. He starts with the premise that Jesus was not raised from the dead. And therefore, everything he approaches it from that point of view has to go from that point of view. And so he comes up with possibilities as to why things happen that kind of contradict what he believes. So he comes to another point. We do that today in other things, in politics, science. You start with a premise. Evolution is true. And once you make that premise, then you make everything fit that. So the atheist scientists look at the evidence and they try to prove their point. Creationist scientists, they don't have any different evidence. It's the same evidence. And they make their points. And their points is God. So you can look at the evidence, but where you're starting from will help you decide which way you want to take that evidence. And that's why we can... Who said this? Don, help me out. I think Jeremiah said it, that the heart is the most deceitful thing ever. The heart. We deceive ourselves so easily. And that scares me. But I can understand it, because we all did. I'm getting off topic. Any other thoughts or questions?
Well, I have a lot of...
A lot of questions. Good, good, good. We got a few minutes.
A lot of thoughts, but,
go ahead. Comments. Go ahead.
Comments. Actually, the last thing that you just said, I thought was pretty important. I was just listening to somebody giving a course on textual criticism yesterday on the internet, and he said something about we have to pursue truth, even if it gives us something that's not certain. Because if you're trying to find certainty. Oftentimes, just like what you said, we start off with this premise and try to prove it, we'll be off.
Yeah.
Whereas if...
Let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, and it feels really unsettling.
To take that position.
But that's what faith is. It's, the truth is there, and it will reveal itself. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was going to ask about the resurrection movement, or make a point, too, that Jesus was seen by multiple people in multiple places in multiple combinations of people for 50 days.
40 days.
So there's that, because that kind of mixes up a bunch of things.
Yeah, different environments that each of these people were in when they saw and spoke with them.
So that would be a little... So even if it was mass hysteria, somehow everyone was hallucinating all at the same time, which is... Really?
That's impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. But suppose it is. Suppose there's a little bit. But you're talking about multiple different...
40 days.
Yeah.
Different places, different times.
Different contexts.
All the same person?
No, all different people.
That's what I'm saying, but they're all seeing that one person.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who did... This used to bother me. Not bother me so much, bother me, but... Who did Jesus appear to? Pardon?
Women first, right?
Well, women first. He only appeared to his followers, the disciples, brothers. He did not appear to those other Jews like Pincus was commenting. Boy, if he appeared to all of them, I said, why wouldn't he have appeared? He could have ended it right there. No more questions asked. Look, here I am, world. But he only appeared to his disciples. Why? I can't answer the exact reason why, but you hit on a little bit of it. Faith. The message was to be brought to the world by other people, by you and me. And if Jesus just appeared, like someone says, well, why doesn't he just appear right there in the sky to all of us so we know it? Well, then there's no more faith. You're seeing him. And it's over.
But he did that, actually.
He did that where?
Before he was crucified. No one denied any of the miracles.
No, that's true.
So he did show himself to
them. That's an interesting point. He did show himself to the world, to the Roman world. But he wasn't really that boastful in it. You remember when he did a lot of the miracles, he said, don't tell too many people. Go back to the priests, but don't tell anybody. And of course, what did they do? They want to tell everybody.
Well, it all got out, but yeah. The non-believers and his enemies saw those.
Oh, yeah, they saw. They saw.
They knew it.
The Jewish community, not the so much the Roman community.
Right.
Yeah.
But my point is, the enemies, his enemies saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they saw him. Yeah, question. His time, he said that. It's my time is not ready yet. Yeah. But it was ready on that night in the garden. Yeah, Don? I thought it was Jeremiah, but I wasn't sure. And I'm the same way, Don. Don't call on me and say, what book and chapter is that? Hold on, let me get my electronic Bible out. I tell you, it's so much easier now. We have less excuses today. It's so easy to look up things and correct ourselves and to find the truth. Thank you, Don. Okay, we're going to get into lesson part 4, part 3 here in about 10 minutes. We'll take a break. Okay.